Look, mister, there are some rules you gotta follow.
Yeah, what kind of rules?
First of all, keep him out of the light. He hates bright light, especially sunlight. It'll kill him. Second, don't give him any water, not even a drink. The most important rule, the rule you can never forget, no matter how much he cries, no matter how much he begs, never feed him after midnight.
Steven Spielberg presents Gremlins. Billy Pelser has a nice home.
Billy, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me.
A nice job. A nice girl.
If you're not doing anything this Thursday night, maybe you'd like to go out on a date with me?
I'd love to.
And loving parents who are about to give him...
You're gonna like this. No, don't shake it. We're gonna have to open it now. Won't wait till Christmas.
The most unusual gift he ever got.
What is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney, be a good dog. My dad gave it to me.
But there are a few things to keep in mind. If you expose it to the light, you may hurt it. If you get it wet, it will multiply.
All that from water? They got wet?
Yeah, plain water.
And most important, no matter how much they beg, never, never let them eat after midnight. Because when they do, they change.
Rafe.
They become clever. Mischievous.
What's going on here?
And dangerous.
Gremlins, huh? Little monsters.
Right.
Hundreds of them.
Well, I don't know, maybe thousands.
They've been here too. Billy, what are these things? Where do they come from?
Look, I know it sounds crazy, I know. But in a few hours, you're gonna have a major disaster on your hands.
Gremlins, directed by Joe Dante. They'll be expecting you.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Bela Lugosi's Undead. I'm AJ.
And I'm Spooky Ryan.
And today we're talking about the 1984 seminal classic Gremlins, directed by Mr. Joe Dante, written all by right. Mr. Chris Columbus, and starring lots of famous people.
That's crazy that someone was like, my last name's Columbus, and I'm going to name him Chris.
Chris. I mean,
yeah, a little bit.
Congratulations. I don't know, though. Like, in the grand scheme of history, I think this Chris Columbus, like, the only, like, atrocity he ever did was, like, maybe Harry Potter 2. Versus okay. The other Christopher Columbus
had a lot more to yeah. reckon with.
Maybe his adaptation of Rent was not like great, but like it wasn't an atrocity.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Amazing.
And now that we have gotten all boomers to click unsubscribe, let's talk about Gremlins.
Let's do it. So AJ, right. Your introduction to Gremlins, what was it like the first time you saw it?
It was a real, like, earth-shattering moment for me because it fucking ruled.
Yeah.
I definitely watched it for the first time in college. It was a movie that I had always been told was much scarier than I thought it was. And so I, as a young child, did not care for horror movies. And in college, that changed, and I watched Gremlins, and I was, like, instantly in love with this movie.
And I think it's in your, I think it's in the stuff that we're going to talk about, but like, it's kind of intense for sort of a quote unquote children's movie, like the blender scene, like it's kind
so,
of a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like, we can get this out of the way real quick. This is one of the more famous things about the movie is that the combination of Gremlins, which was also produced by Steven Spielberg and Temple of Doom, which was directed by Steven Spielberg and produced by him, is why we have the PG-13 rating today. Wow. Because before it was G, P, G, R. And these movies, those two movies were so intense. And they're like, we have to fix this. It is too much. Like, it's not an R-rated movie, but it's like way more intense than a PG rated
movie. Yeah. So, we need more of a guidance besides parental guidance.
Yes. So they went ahead and added PG-13. And thank you, Gremlins, because the world is a better place for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I actually watched it in, I've been wanting to watch Gremlins forever. Everyone's, you know, it's sort of on there, but I've never really actually seen it until, honestly, we're about to record this. So my first introduction is just getting ready for this podcast.
Well, I mean, I'm excited to see how you see it, because I've now lived with it for more than a decade, sure, watching it all the time. And so, like, at least once every year for Christmas, it's one of my Christmas mm-hmm. rotation movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I am curious to see how you feel about it.
I think the thing is, it's sort of like Romeo and Juliet. Like, when you're reading it, it's like, oh, I've seen this story so many times. And I think the reason I've seen this story so many times is because it comes from Gremlins, right?
Yeah, basically. So many people have borrowed from this movie at this point that it has more or less become like the ideal, like, not rated R creature feature that you can create mm-hmm. and still, like, dominate. And you know, there's 1,000 movies like it, but I think let's go ahead and knock out a 60-second plot description first.
Okay. 90.
You want to do this one, or do you want me to time it?
I will allow you to do it. Or do you want to switch it to 60? Because you keep saying 60.
I'm sorry, 90 seconds. We need 90 seconds.
Yeah, I agree. I'll let you do it, because it's a seminal movie for you. You really enjoyed it, so I'll let you do it.
Yes. Okay.
Ready, set, go.
Okay, so a very terrible dad is off away trying to make some deals to buy some more stuff because he's a terrible inventor. And mm-hmm. he goes to a store in Chinatown. Mm-hmm. We'll get back to that later. And mm-hmm. when he's in Chinatown, he goes ahead and he picks up a little gremlin. He more or less steals it. And then he flies back home and he gives it to his son. And his son, who is living at home, supporting his family with his job at the bank while his dad's off gallivanting around the planet doing who the fuck knows what. He's like, oh, cool, I have a new pet. And he immediately breaks all of the rules that he's supposed to have when you said, don't do this. He's very easily fooled. And the gremlins start to take over the town. It turns out the little Mogwai gremlin known as Gizmo, when he gets wet, he creates a bunch of little spawns. Mm-hmm. And these little spawns are much more evil than him. And they have bad intentions. They take over the town. They start mm-hmm. trying to hurt and kill people. And mm-hmm. eventually the boy and his girlfriend have to fight back with Gizmo to stop mm-hmm. the gremlins from killing the town.
Wow, dude, you killed it. You're well under 90, so good for you.
I mean, this particular movie is pretty straightforward.
Yes.
And it is also like a clean 90 minutes, I think.
Yeah, like, you know,
yeah.
When
it's
did,
an
like,
hour and 45 minutes long.
Do you think it's because technology has advanced so much that there's not like, because these inventor tropes of like people have kind of like gone away? Like, I think the last time I saw it was like Flubber. Right,
like, so like the thing, like, thing about, like, yeah, inventors like this have gone away because they got replaced by coders.
Yeah,
right.
That's
the
true.
Next great thing is to make an app. It was not no longer to make a physical invention. It's to make a digital invention. And so, I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I think that another big part of it is that it had already been done so many times to death at this point.
Yeah,
that we'd already seen the high end of what it could be and the low end of what it could be.
Right.
And I think that we need to go ahead and take Randall Peltzer, the dad in this movie, and send him to The Hague for war crimes, because he is like torturing this poor family.
I know.
He
with all
is letting monsters run wild through the streets. He is one of the worst human beings in a movie. He makes a racist joke about dragon's breath to a Chinese God. Man.
Oh no.
Like, everything about this man needs to go to jail. Like, he's done. I'm done with him. He's terrible. I have to get that rant out at some point.
So we all know he's getting the Corey.
Yeah, he is the Corey Award. He's a burden to not only his family, but to his town. Like, he's the worst.
I've never heard you lambast anyone as much as his dad. That's amazing.
I mean, the actor who plays him, Hoyt Axton, is very good in the role.
Yeah.
But the actual character is like a despicable human being.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So where do you want to go from here, H?
Well, the whole thing about Gremlins is we really need to start with Joe Dante, who is one of my favorite filmmakers of all time. And it's really a shame that he's not making movies anymore. Mm. So, like, just so we can do a quick run over his IMDb. Joe Dante first broke out in 1978 with Piranha, which is a Jaws parody ripoff. And very much came out the same year as Jaws 2. We'll get back to that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
He then does Explorers, which is a nice little, like, kids explore the galaxy and find aliens, right?
Okay.
He does The Howling, which is one of the all-time great,
incredible,
like, werewolf movies.
Mm-hmm.
He does Matinee, which is, like, a bug nuts insane movie that I recommend everybody watch, yeah, about, like, Key West and about a movie theater and the end of the world.
Okay.
And the atomic bomb.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Inner Space is, like, a visual effects masterpiece in the mid-80s.
Small Soldiers. You got
Small Soldiers is dope as shit.
That is, like, Burbs. My, like, childhood is Small Soldiers. Like,
the... yeah. I mean, like, he basically, and then obviously Gremlins 2 later, he does that as well.
Does he?
His whole career is basically building up to making a Looney Tunes movie. Okay. And, like, yes, Space Jam gets all the acclaim. I would argue Looney Tunes Back in Action is actually the better movie.
Oh,
an insane movie, but it's actually, like, a better representation of the Looney Tunes.
Okay.
So
I want to, like, know more about Joe Dante, though. Did he, like, grow up eating cereal watching the Looney Tunes? Like, what? Why is this guy so wonky?
Okay, so Joe Dante basically runs in a sphere around Spielberg a couple of times. So obviously he makes Piranha.
Mm.
And Piranha being ripoff of Jaws was a big deal. It was produced by Roger Corman, who's making all of the cheap horror films of the 70s that people love, and is basically giving everybody their first real chance.
Mm.
So Spielberg is already kind of aware of Dante.
Okay.
Universal is like, we're going to go ahead and sue Corman to get him to not release this movie. Mm. And Spielberg stepped in and said, no, you have to let this movie come out. It's a parody. It's not a big deal. And they wanted, to sue Piranha because it was coming out the same year as Jaws 2.
Oh.
So about this time, they finished Jaws 2, and they're thinking, what if we do Jaws 3?
Mm-hmm.
And a Jaws 3 movie would eventually release. Jaws 3D takes place at SeaWorld, the logical next step of the Jaws franchise.
Of course.
And, but somehow, in the development process, this all came out in this recent documentary, Sharksploitation, which is a documentary.
That.
You saw it? Okay.
No, I didn't see it. I just saw that.
You saw that it exists. Right. Okay. So it's on Shudder, so definitely go watch it.
Yeah.
In this documentary, they talk about how Joe Dante was approached to direct Jaws 3, and he pitched the idea of calling it Jaws 3 People Zero.
That's incredible.
As a parody movie, the writers of National Lampoon and Animal House joined to write a screenplay. In the opening of the movie, they're going to have Peter Benchley, the writer of Jaws, the book, jump into a swimming pool and get eaten by a shark in his swimming pool. And it was only going to get crazier from there.
Oh my god.
And so it was going to have Gremlins energy in a Jaws movie. And somewhere along the way they said, we can't make this movie, we can't do it.
I love that.
They stopped him from making that movie, and so he's like, it's okay, we'll go ahead and we'll make other stuff. And in the process, he gets brought on to direct a segment of the Twilight Zone movie, which I don't know if you know this, Ryan, his section of the Twilight Zone movie is great. It's about a little boy who basically, like, controls the world around him, like, through, like, psychosis.
Okay.
And makes people do everything that he wants them
to. Oh, I think I've heard, I've never watched it, but I've heard of it, where he, like, can just use his imagination to make things happen.
Yes. And he's, like, an evil boy.
Yeah.
Like, so his section is really good. A different section of that movie is really bad because the lead actor and two children that were on set got killed in an accident.
By John
Landis, who directed American Werewolf in London. He murdered three people.
What?
Wait,
the actor from American Werewolf in London?
Not the actor, the director of American Werewolf in London.
He murdered
basically sent off fireworks and pyrotechnics next to a helicopter that clearly shouldn't have been there. And the helicopter crashed and killed the star of his part of the short and the two children he was running through the woods carrying at the time. Like, they got really brutally killed.
And,
like, the movie went under, like, intense lawsuits, and eventually the movie just released, like, kind of quietly.
Sure.
So, but it had a section from Spielberg, Dante, George Miller, the guy who did all the Mad Max movies, and that section with John Landis. It was, like, supposed to be, like, this big high budget, like, return for the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, marred with tragedy.
So
somewhere after that, Spielberg's like, Dante is too good to just be, like, not in the spotlight after all these other movies he's releasing. Yeah. And so he gets brought on board for Gremlins.
Okay.
So, yes, Dante has a very particular style. He's a very talented filmmaker.
Sure.
And because some of those later movies, like Looney Tunes Back in Action, weren't successful, what he wants to make is just not something Hollywood makes anymore. Mm. And so he hasn't directed a movie in years.
Yeah. It's kind of this, like, wonky physical comedy, like, sort of feel. Yeah. Is that, I mean, that just isn't really what's happening right now.
Yeah, no, not at all. His last movie that he directed a segment of Nightmare Cinema in 2018.
Mm.
And before that, the last movie he directed was called Burying the X in 2014.
Wow.
Before that, it was something called The Hole. Like, his last few movies have not been ideal, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But he also hasn't had a lot of shots at the apple. He directed 10 episodes of the Hawaii Five-0 TV reboot.
Okay. Like, that seems more up his alley, strangely. Like,
strangely, yes. So, but Joe Dante is a goddamn hero for horror. Sure. And I mean, just like Piranha, Gremlins, The Howling.
Yeah.
Done. He's already like enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But so that's Joe Dante. And he's like the reason why I love this movie so much, I think.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean,
that's interesting. Go ahead.
How does this fit into like the Spielberg, like, produced movies to you? Because like he's also produced like Transformers and obviously Gremlins and like Back to the Future. Does it fit that he made this movie or helps make this movie?
I guess, like, in a way, it's kind of like this big blockbuster, like, monster action sort of feel, but it's definitely off the beaten road, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like Transformers makes sense, right? Like Jaws, you know, all these different movies, and then all of a sudden Gremlins, it's like, okay. I definitely think he took a shot on Joe Dante, right? That's what it seems like, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Dante was like kind of in the ether, but this, he definitely didn't have anything as big as this.
No.
And then the other person to bring up is Chris Columbus, who as a writer at this point had a pretty like popular career. At this point he had not had a very popular career. This is basically his like second movie that he wrote. Wow. He would immediately after this do The Goonies. He would then do Young Sherlock Holmes. And then from there he became a director and eventually directed Harry Potter 1 and 2.
Wow.
As well as along the way, Bicentennial Man, Stepmom, Mrs. Doubtfire, Home Alone. Wow. So like this guy becomes like a popular director as well.
Yeah.
But for this movie, he is the writer. So
that's awesome, right? That he's able to move all the way through sort of the pieces of Hollywood there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about like some of the in general like vibe that you got from the Gremlins themselves. What do you think of the Gremlin design, first of all?
Furbies. Gizmo? Yeah, right? Furbies literally just a ripoff of Gremlins. Like, obviously as a child I like never had, but then when you're watching it I'm like, oh, these are literally Furbies. Like,
which is so funny because early in the movie the terrible, horrible inventor dad says everybody will want one of these in their house. And sure enough, Furbies were a fad for a while there.
Yeah. Did you ever have your Furby's battery dying in your closet and making horrible, creepy noises?
I think the only time I ever interacted with Furbies was at your house. I don't think I ever personally owned a Furby in our house. I might be wrong, but I definitely remember you had one. Your family had one.
Me and Haley had a Furby, and in like years and years, it would be in the closet and randomly go off. But then after a while, its battery started dying, and then it's doing its whole Furby thing, but like very slowly and very creepily, just like,
oh, scary
Furby. Love you.
it's oh, interesting God. That Furbies have kind of been reclaimed by our generation.
Yeah.
And like in like Mitchell's the Machines, and then what's the other? Oh, and then obviously Uncut Gems.
Like, yes. We claim them.
Yeah.
It would have been way cooler if Gremlins had taken advantage of Gremlins and made little Gremlins.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm probably, God, I would love to have a little gremlin figurine in my house someday.
I would love that.
But yeah, that would be very cool. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. We at one point in time, Rachel and I owned a little chinchilla. and the chinchilla was named Gizmo.
Oh, like, I love that.
I mean, we clearly, yeah, I was able to impart some of my love onto that, sure, onto my family as a whole. So,
yep.
Yep. Absolutely. No, I think that they absolutely kill it with the actual character design. The design of the gremlin, what's really cool about it, frankly, is like they're pulling from a lot of different things in history, but the person who makes it is Chris Wallace, who is the person who did the face melting Nazis in Raiders of the Lost Ark. But he created that effect. And so leading up to this movie, he did the piranhas for Dante. Like he created the literal piranhas. He worked on Scanners with Cronenberg. He worked on Humanoids from the Deep, which is a scary movie. He did some of the effects on E.T. and Return of the Jedi. He helped make Ewoks.
Wow.
So we're talking about, like, the legacy is, like, clearly there. And apparently, when he got sent the script, he just wrote "Ha" on the cover because he did the technology to do what they were asking him to do didn't exist.
Yeah.
And he didn't have, like, anybody in his crew to really take care of the work, but he just needed money, so he said, "Yes, I will do it." He was 28 years old.
Wow. That's incredible. So he had to create things to make this work. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. He said, quote, "They'll never buy Gizmo, the version that I created. He doesn't look real. I'm terrible," is what he said on set. And they said, "Yeah, absolutely. This is what we want." They even matched the fur pattern on Gizmo to one of Steven Spielberg's dogs at the time.
Oh,
Steven Spielberg had a beagle, so that's why it looks so dog-like almost.
Oh, I love
is that. It is matching Spielberg stuff.
Well, and definitely then, the fur, right, looks like a dog.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then so they even, like, at one point in time thought about doing it in stop motion, which would have made sense at the time in the 80s.
Would have, sure.
And they even considered putting monkeys inside of the gremlin costumes before they did the puppet versions that we see in the movie.
I would love, I just want to see a world where they use monkeys.
Yeah. It would have been really nuts, actually. Gremlins so throwing bad poop at each other.
I love it so much. Oh my God. I want to live in that universe.
And Wallace wins an Oscar for his very next movie, which is The Fly, another Cronenberg movie with Jeff Goldblum. Wow. So it's really cool that they did all of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Created these little things. I just want to be in the room where they're like, okay, think about this, but like monkeys.
Yeah, the 80s was crazy. Like, so much cocaine was going around. There was like, what if?
What if? And we'll get to that in a second and late, maybe at the end with Gremlins too.
Yes. All right. So the other thing about this movie is it's just like stacked full of famous people. Right. Because Zach Galligan, Billy, he was fine. He probably could have been replaced at some point in time, but Galligan's good enough for an 80s boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Phoebe Cates was super famous because she was just in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where she is supposed to be like the one that all the guys fantasize about.
Okay.
I believe she appears nude in that movie multiple times. Huh. So she was like the it girl at that moment. She was trying to break out of the being like the lusty person that everybody was just lusting after, and what was trying to establish herself more as an actress. So then there's a bunch of people who are like, and then Judge Reinhold is also like a big 80s actor who appears in much stuff, and then when he becomes like a dad age, he's the dad in like a thousand things. Like I think he's in like Liar Liar as like the stepdad. I know he's the stepdad in the Santa Claus. Like, he's just all over those kinds of movies.
He just, like, is typecast as the stepdad.
Like... Yes. So then there's a bunch of, like, people who are famous from movies that are outside of the mainstream, which is a huge credit to Dante for finding them.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is Dick Miller, who is a mainstay of the Corman universe. Like, he plays the main character in Little Shop of Horrors, the 1960s version, before it was a musical. So he was like famous for being in all of those random movies as like a one-off character who shows up for two scenes and is great for a couple scenes, character actor, knocks it out of the ballpark every time. But like he's very much in like all like the schlocky B movies of this era.
Yeah, interesting.
K.A. Luke, who is the old Asian man who is, I feel like the representation is not great in how they depict him. They kind of rely on a lot of stereotypes, and it's probably the biggest flaw with this movie is how they depict Asian people in general.
Yeah.
But K.A. Luke was one of the founders of the Screen Actors Guild.
Wow.
Of the team that's currently on strike. He helped create that. Wow. He was the original Kato in the 1930s serials for the Green Hornet when they were first put on screen.
Wow.
And he was Brock in Space Ghost.
Coast to Coast?
Not Coast to Coast. But the original animated show.
Yes.
So, like, he is a extremely influential and important actor for Asian cinema.
Yeah.
But just unfortunately, because of the era in which he was in movies, he was often relegated to less than ideal parts, I would say.
Right. Yeah, that's a bummer.
Then you've also got Glenn Turman, who plays the teacher, with the only black person in this small town, I would like to know. One of the only
very 80s of them. Like,
yes. Glenn Turman was kind of famous already because he had been in Cooley High. He was also married to Aretha Franklin.
Oh, wow.
Like, he was like a famous black actor. Oh, and cool. Yeah, an important black actor at that.
Yeah.
And then the other characters are on the side. You have Corey Feldman is one of the kids in the town. So he's obviously going to be in 1,000 other movies in the 80s.
Wow.
Like he's one of the kids in Gremlins and he's in Lost Boys and all those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got Jonathan Banks from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul is one of the cops.
Wow.
The cameos in the movie include Spielberg, Jerry Goldsmith, the composer, Chuck Jones, the guy who created the Looney Tunes, is just in at the bar in one scene.
Wow, that's really cool.
And then the voices of the people in the movie, of all of the Gremlins, are Howie Mandel voices Gizmo, the deal or no deal guy.
Wow. Were these people not famous at the time, or were they famous?
A lot of them were not famous at the time. Okay, or they were, again, like kind of like outside the mainstream. So they wouldn't have been something that people would know, or somebody would people would know in the 80s.
Right.
But like now, 30 years later, you can look back and be like, all these people are famous.
Wow.
And then just the whole fucking rest of the list. Frank Welker, the voice of Scooby-Doo, is Stripe.
Wow.
Don Steele is like an all-time famous legendary DJ in Los Angeles. Marvin Miller was the voice of the Robbie the Robot in the Forbidden Planet. Robbie the Robot has a cameo in one of the background shots.
That's incredible.
Michael Winslow does all the voices, does all the sound effects in the Police Academy movies.
Mm.
He's one of the Gremlins. He also does all the sound effects in Spaceballs.
Mm.
Peter Cullen, the voice of Optimus Prime and the Predator.
Wow.
is another one of the voices. Bob Bergen is the voice of the Porky Pig, and Bob Holt was the voice of the Lorax. Just like a murderer's row of voice talent to voice these little evil gremlins.
Wow. Like, yeah.
Jesus.
It makes you wonder sometimes on like the hits and the casting can really push a movie to another level in that sort of way, right?
Exactly, like, right? Because
these people eventually all became pretty big. I don't know. Was Gremlins I wasn't alive at the time. Was Gremlins like a phenomena? Like where people like, this is amazing. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So in terms of like box office, Gremlins definitely was one of the bigger movies of 1984.
Mm-hmm.
It made $153 million domestic.
Huh.
The international numbers aren't particularly well known because they just weren't really captured at that time.
Interesting.
But in terms of like actual like yearly box office, what in 1984 I believe it was the third highest grossing movie of the year.
Wow.
It was Ghostbusters, Temple of Doom, Gremlins.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's literally like a phenomena at the time.
Yes.
Like...
it made $50 million more dollars than Karate Kid, which was number four.
Wow.
So, and I mean, like, the other movies up here, you've got like Terms of Endearment is down at number 9. You've got The Karate Kid at 4, Police Academy at 5, Footloose at 6, Beverly Hills Cop at 7. All movies that it beat. Like Purple Rain at 12. Like, again, a murderer's row in the top 12 in general, but Gremlins is number 3.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. I just did the inflation calculator. That's nearly like $500 million. In revenue in today's
Money. It would be huge if it had been released today. Like the comparison,
freaking crazy.
Yeah, it would be doing like legitimately like a little less than Barbie money.
Wow.
That's what we're talking about terms of a hit. Wow. And then if you like go back and you look at the films of 1984, mm-hmm. I want to say, and I'm double checking this as we speak, mm-hmm. I am fairly certain that it released the same day as Ghostbusters.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. That is, yeah. Wow. Yeah, Ghostbusters is a top movie in 1984. That's crazy. And then, of course, the book 1984. Yes,
it released the same day as Ghostbusters.
Wow.
Yep.
So it was competing with Ghostbusters.
So really, if we're talking about like, if we're talking about 1984, their Barbenheimer was Grembusters.
Grembusters.
Like,
that's incredible.
Like, but seriously, it was the number one, number four highest grossing movies of the year. Came out on the same year.
I'm looking at some of the movies: Indiana Jones, The Temple of Doom, The Terminator, Ghostbusters, Once Upon a Time in America, Karate Kid.
I would also like to quickly point. I would like to do a quick amendment because I believe Beverly Hills Cop released in December of 1984, so it technically would have made the most money, but because most of its money came in January and February, it wasn't showing on the Box Office Mojo when I was looking. Wow. So technically Gremlins was number four in the box office, but still
it's incredible. This is like an incredible year. Nightmare on Elm Street, Never Ending Story, Revenge of the Nerds, crazy.
Yeah,
16 Candles.
1984 is a gangbusters year. Jeez. Not enough credit is given to that year.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're talking about a full blown, just phenomenon.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, it's also pulling on years of pop culture because you have the Roald Dahl Gremlins book from World War II. Mm. Falling Hair is the Looney Tunes short where Bugs Bunny fights a gremlin who's trying to destroy the plane during World War II.
Huh.
I'm not sure if you've ever seen that short, but that's definitely got to be one of the reasons why Dante took on this. Because as I've noted, Dante hired half the damn cast of Looney Tunes to voice the characters anyway.
Right.
He will later direct a Looney Tunes movie. Obviously, it is something that he is interested in.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They also talked about a couple other people who could have stepped in to make this movie. Mm. Tim Burton was another person they considered because they had seen the Frankenweenie short. And the reason they did not ultimately go with Burton is because he did not have a feature length credit on his resume yet.
Wow.
So
what would that movie be like? I think it might be, I don't know, it might be better.
It might be, it might not be. It's it's one of those things where it's like, this is a perfect encapsulation of what it is. It would be darker, you would think, but at the same time,
I think it would be more timeless, whereas Gremlins is such a cultural 80s icon sort of thing. Does that make sense?
I would say that. However, the movie that Burton makes instead, which comes out the following year in 1985, was Pee Wee's Big Adventure. which is also a little time capsule. Which, by the way, I love that movie, and RIP. Sure.
Paul Rubens,
who passed away this week, which he's from my hometown too.
Oh wow. I knew that.
Paul Rubens grew up in Sarasota.
Wow.
That's also where he got caught doing the thing that got him in a lot of trouble.
I do remember growing up and hearing about that.
Yes. So complicated guy, a lot of demons. But
I also want to say what do they expect people are doing in those theaters?
Let's
continue.
The movie was once also a little bit darker.
Sure.
Chris Columbus said there was a scene where the mother was decapitated and her head was rolled down the stairs to Billy.
Jeez.
They took that out of the movie. They also had a scene where the gremlins attacked and ate the patrons of a McDonald's.
Wow.
So it would have been simultaneously look at this. It's a McDonald's. How funny is that? That's in this movie. Branding. And now we're going to eat all the patrons.
I don't know if that's what McDonald's wanted that branding deal.
The shots throughout the movie, especially when you see the town square, that Kingston Falls is just the set from Back to the Future. Straight up. It's the same set.
That's so cool.
I mean, it's a very famous location on the Universal backlot where it's still there to this day, where you can walk that area as part of their tour. The movie being shown in the theater is Snow White, which obviously was a very surprising thing that even at the time people were like, Walt would be rolling over in his grave if Disney, if he knew that they loaned this movie out to the Gremlins. There's something to be said at the time that this would have been even more interesting than even today, because that was when like Disney was full blown in their vault phase.
Yeah.
And they would only put movies back in theaters to re-release them to the masses. Like that was the only way to see it before they put it on like VHS in the 90s.
Yeah.
So to then put it inside a movie where the Gremlins then take over the projection booth, like, and screw up the movie.
Oh, my
God. That was great.
Yeah.
There's just, like, so many random things going on in this movie. I mean, Gremlins is, like, just so much fun. Do you have, like, any moments that really stood out to you?
I mean, like, I talked about that blender scene. I was like, okay, this is, like, interesting and light. And then he's just, like, and, like, kind of, like, kiddish, like, for children. And then he takes a evil gremlin. It blends it in a blender, and I'm like, damn, yo, fucking violent. Like,
the microwave,
Gremlin
explodes.
I was like, this seemed like it was supposed to, like, the whole setup is it's like for children.
Yeah, so I think that's the big thing, and I think we just go ahead and call that now. Is as soon as Stripe and his bros come out, like, that is the definitely the Norman Bates moment of the movie where suddenly you think you're in one movie and it's an entirely other thing.
Yes.
I think my favorite moment in the whole movie will always be when Mrs. Deagle, when she sits down in her little chair and the gremlins are the carolers outside and she goes, oh no. And she tries to run away and the thing launches her. She's like, I don't want to die. That just shoots her.
Oh no. Oh my god!
It's so dark.
The biggest thing is like the Looney Tunes are like cartoons, so there's like a separation of all of that. But when you add Looney Tune-esque things to reality, it becomes really dark really quickly. Like
the Dick Miller scenes too. I love him, but I think it's hilarious how he's always complaining about foreign made stuff throughout the entire movie. And then he doesn't actually die because he shows back up for the second one. But like, I thought he was dead the first time I watched the movie.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I was gonna say, the other thing that always catches me off guard is the story that Phoebe Cates tells to Billy about her dad getting stuck in the chimney. It is one of the funniest and darkest things I've ever heard in a movie, like, without a doubt.
I know.
Like, and for those of you who have not seen Gremlins, first of all, obviously at this point you should be watching it. Yeah. But also the fact that like her dad tried to be Santa Claus and got stuck in the chimney and died. And so she hates Christmas.
It's so it sounds dark.
It sounds like a villain origin story. Like it really does.
It does sound like a villain story. Oh my god. I just like that. That is it supposed to be funny? Is it supposed to be dark? Is it supposed to be somewhere in between? Like,
it really is somewhere in between. Like, I think it really is like right dead center in the middle of those two things.
And we have Gremlins, and then we like wonder why, you know, like this is a Gen X person, right? Like, Dante,
I would assume so, yes, based on the years. Yeah,
very Gen X movie. You're just like, fuck
it. Oh, no, he's a baby boomer.
Baby boomer. 1946. That's fascinating.
Yeah. But the thing is, he's also coming at this. If he's born 1946, that means he is growing up in the 50s. He loved the B movie sci-fi movies. And then he's a teenager.
That's where he's coming from.
And he's a teenager in the 60s. So he is very much experiencing a rather, I would say, more countercultural vibe as he's coming into his age as an artist.
Yeah.
And then that also puts him a little under 40 when he makes this movie. He's like 38, 36. Yeah. So he's on the younger end of the directors of this era making movies like this. It's funny because that means he's also right about the same age as Steven Spielberg, if I'm being honest. Because even though, I mean, like the thing about Spielberg, obviously, is always that he is more that he was so young when he started making movies that people forget. So,
That's crazy. I wonder how validated he feels that, like, you know, the government's like, there's aliens. Like, that's a little aside.
But for reference, Steven Spielberg is 76 years old.
Okay.
So the exact same age as Joe Dante.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yep. They were born within weeks of each other.
Wow. So he was like helping out a buddy. It kind of sounded like it was like him helping out a younger guy, but he's like so more of like helping out someone like right next to him there. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It just said Steven Spielberg had already gained so much power because if you remember, he directs Jaws
mm-hmm.
in 1975. He's born in 46. He's 29 mm-hmm. years old when that movie comes out.
Wow. Yeah, Spielberg is the one with the third kind or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched that in like it was like the 30th year or whatever. And they were like, yeah, Spielberg just sits out in the middle of the desert and like just sits there and hopes he comes in contact with aliens. I'm like, wow, dude, that's commitment. Like,
jeez. Yeah. Seriously.
So anyways, continue. That's my aside.
Real quick for our purposes. Did you hear any of the dog barking just now?
I do.
Okay. Darn it. Yeah. AZ. Easy. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the awards then, because I think we've pretty much mostly covered the story without getting into some of the specifics, I guess. I mean, there's just so many cool things that we love about this movie that I think this is, let's just go ahead and jump in. So first one up is Best Kill. So you've got three obvious ones. You've got Miss Deagle getting launched. You've got the cops and the car.
Yep.
And then you've got Futterman, his wife, who gets run into by the snowplow. But she does not come back for the sequel.
She did not make it through. So what do you think, AJ? Where are you putting it on there?
I would argue that it should be Miss Deagle.
It's like the funniest plus the most dark in that sort of way.
Yeah, exactly that.
It kind of fits the movie of the Best Kill. So we'll give it to Miss Deagle there.
And then next one up would be Gone Too Soon. And to this one, I would say the Futtermans, the teacher, or Dave Mars, a.k.a. the Santa that the Gremlins murder.
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure. What, give me your cases for all three, AJ.
I mean, the Futtermans don't do anything that deserves to be murdered. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Mr. Futterman is a little xenophobic. So, you know what? He doesn't get it then. Plus he doesn't turn to the next movie anyway.
Sure.
So that leaves it to either the teacher or the Santa Claus. I don't necessarily think the teacher had to die. I think they could have been like, oh, he got stabbed by the gremlins, but like he didn't pass away.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go ahead and say the teacher played by Glenn Turman.
Okay, I can agree with that one. I feel that.
All right. So Savini, best effect, we have the pupa gremlins, which would be the like. Them
that is really cool.
Off of his back, the microwave gremlin or the blender gremlin.
I mean, the blender gremlin is more like grotesque, but the microwave is pretty freaking cool. But the pupa is so interesting in that time. Like, I think today, like, I don't know how they did that practical effect. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, even to this point, I would agree with you. It's a hard effect to pull off in the best circumstances,
right? I think so. I think, like, you know, as horror fans, I think microwave blender makes sense, but like the pupa is just so fascinating. I just want to know how they friggin' did it.
All right, biggest regret. Do you think Deagle should have yelled brats at the gremlins, or do you think that Futterman should have been complaining about his foreign made cars? What are you thinking?
Let's see. I think the brats is probably a big regret there, right? Like,
yeah, I would agree. I think that's the one.
Yeah.
Most overconfident, I put the cops in this list. Okay. Yeah, they don't believe Billy, and because of that, the car crashes and they die.
Sure.
Also, the dad, inventor who thinks this is a good idea for pets. As an overconfident.
I think the dad is the most overconfident person of any movie ever. Like, you're giving a teenager a pet that requires multiple must follow rules. That's overconfident.
Like, not only that, but he's also overconfident because he thinks he's ever gonna make a living as an inventor. Where
what was the spatula, like the multi-tool, the kitchen multi-tool,
Bathroom buddy?
Yes.
God, I hate this dad so much. He's the absolute worst.
Well, are we gonna give it to the dad here, or do we give the dad the choreo?
He gets both. You know what? Fuck both. It. He's both the choreo. He's
overly confident and Corey.
Yes. God, I hate this man.
Okay. Give us the icon feedback, AJ.
Icon feedback came from Steven Spielberg, who straight up said it was one of the most original things that had ever come across his desk in many years, which is why he bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, to be fair, I can't argue with that.
Yep. I agree with that as well.
That leads us to our last two, the Mandy Award and the Who Wins the Movie.
Yeah.
So let's do Who Wins the Movie first.
Okay.
I'm torn because Who Wins the Movie is either Chris Columbus or Joe Dante.
Mm-hmm.
My argument would be Chris Columbus is Who Wins the Movie because he then immediately starts directing movies off of the success of Gremlins, where Dante continues to direct movies, but he was already a known person. Mm-hmm. And so he's continued doing the things he was already doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. He already has sort of like a following. So he's like, so you're talking about who wins it or who won
because of the effect of it. Because if you look at his filmography, he does the Twilight Zone thing. He does Gremlins. And the next movie he does is the kids movie Explorers, which is fun, but it's not necessarily like,
Gremlins made it so that he could do anything he wanted, right? He kind of led him.
That is a good point. It is to borrow the parlance of one of the other great podcasts out there. It is the blank check movie, like, or it's the guarantor that makes it so he can make whatever he wants moving forward.
Right. Exactly. Okay. I mean, he made them in that day's money almost $500 million. Like,
yes, that's a good point. That's a good point. I would, because the only reason I was also trying to be a little bit hesitant on it, I think this is his Mandy. This is his absolute, like, iconic peak. He is coming off of a lot of ridiculous movies, but he does this and it, like, puts him at the top. Right. The movies that he makes from here on out are not necessarily the best of movies, or they're not necessarily as culturally significant as that.
Yeah, nothing is ever. Yeah, the Gremlins is, when you think of the 80s, the Gremlins is going to come up.
And it was funny, and we need to talk about this now because cultural impact of Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it helps Spielberg do more production stuff or all that other stuff. It also leads to Gremlins 2.
Mm. Yes.
Which Joe Dante could have just said, yeah, Gremlins get unleashed in the town. And it gives him the cachet to make movies for another decade, right? Because that movie just if he had just gone the Ghostbusters 2 route and basically just remade the exact same movie he had already made, with like more of the same stuff and with like a slightly bigger budget, it would have been popular.
Yes, and Gremlins instead, 2 is fucking insane. Like, it is instead insane. He made
the most insane. I mean, like, listen, I'm up here. Yeah. Like, I'm not the ringmaster, but I am like third chair of the Gremlins 2 is one of the greatest sequels of all time. It's like Jordan Peele's ahead of me.
Yeah.
And like, there's like a handful of other people I put ahead of me as like the real like commanders of this army.
I'm going to be blatantly honest. I enjoyed it more than the original Gremlins because Gremlins has been so overly reproduced. Whereas Gremlins 2 is super original because it's so crazy that there's I don't think any other people would be like, we're going to green light this. Like, I think it's only because Joe Dante was making it and only because Gremlins, the original, was so good. Like, it made so much money. They were like, we'll let you do whatever you want. And he made this. It's a good monstrosity, but it is a monstrosity.
Like, I'm trying to think of other like completely unhinged movies that people have made that are like Gremlins 2.
Can't think of anything else.
Because like, obviously, as I was saying, like it would have been, he basically just like held on to all the ideas he had for Jaws 3 Human Zero.
Yes. Put it in there
and just put it into a Gremlins movie. Just said go. There's
the Key and Peele short. Is like literally, I watched that before I saw Gremlins 2, and it made the movie that much better. Like, there's a gremlin. Oh, what if it shot electricity? Ooh, it's in the movie.
What if the Hulkster's in the movie? Boom, it's in the movie.
boom, it's in the movie. What if there's one that's like kind of hot? Oh yeah, hot sexy girl, we gonna put that in the, it's in the movie. Like
yeah, we're gonna have a future episode on Gremlins 2 because there's no way that we can't. Because it is I don't think I can fully put into words how much I love that movie until we do like a 95-minute episode on it.
It's literally insane.
Of us breaking down scene by scene where they come up with the fucking... And again, nothing will ever top the moment that I like turned it on and there was a Looney Tunes like bit at the beginning. And I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no, that was table setting.
Perfectly. Like that had to get put in there to set the tone. I don't think he had that in originally. Like, so what a crazy.
The one thing I need to do is I need to find a copy that allows me to view the original VHS copy.
Yeah.
Because this is just a quick preview. Sure. At one point in Gremlins 2, if you've never seen it, the movie stops because the Gremlins have ripped out the projectionist stuff inside the movie you're currently watching.
Yeah.
And Hulk Hogan tells them to put the movie back on.
Right.
The Hulk Hogan. And apparently,
which is like the equivalent of like The Rock doing that today. Like,
and apparently, in the original VHS copies, that it was in that part was altered, so it was as if the Gremlins fucked up your VHS.
Whoa, I love that.
Yeah, I need to find a copy. Like, I am gonna start going to every Goodwill in the state to find Gremlins too.
I would love it for every iteration that they come out, whether digital or CDs.
They just keep refilming one scene for it.
Yeah. In the future, it's like, you know, it's in your eyes. They have to like.
I'm just imagining what the 4K equivalent would be. It would be The Rock being like, put the movie back on.
Yeah, exactly.
Ryan Reynolds shows up for like 30 seconds and is like, hey guys.
I'm hey Ryan guys, Reynolds. Come on.
And while you're at it, please watch Welcome to Wrexham.
Oh my gosh.
But seriously, I
buy my tequila or gin.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, okay. Joe Dante, Mandy Award, Joe Dante wins the movie. Because clearly if we're not talking, I mean, like we're talking about Gremlins 2, an insane movie that could only exist if he wins this movie.
That's actually true. Okay.
All right. So with that, that's our episode on Gremlins and a preview of what's to come when we eventually cover Gremlins 2, which is definitely, it has to be on a docket at this point. There's no way we can't deliver on that.
Yeah, one. I agree.
We're gonna give it a little bit of time first, but yeah
it's
coming. All right, so if you guys want to hit us up, you can hit me up at alan.french at Sunshine State Cineplex. You can hit me up on Instagram at the Bela Lugosi Pod account or at my personal The Alan French on Instagram. Ryan?
Yep, you can find me anywhere at Keep It Spooky 09. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and if this is your first time listening to us because Gremlins is awesome and you love Gremlins and it's just worth your time to listen to it, check out our backlogs because we have a ton of stuff back there. We've got episodes on Hereditary. We've got episodes on A24 scary stuff. We've got Talk to Me. We've got Skinamarink.
Yeah.
We've got Black Christmas. Check it all out. We got a lot of
smaller smaller movies like May, those sort of things, some cult classics as well.
Yep.
So check them out.
Great. And with that, I'm AJ.
And I'm Spooky Ryan. Keep it spooky.
Peace.